What's up, guys? This is the Black Queer Culture Show with James Patrick. Check out today's episode. What's up, guys? It's James Patrick here, and welcome to another episode of the Black Queer Culture Show. We are so excited. I love talking about mental health. I love talking about all things having to do with the brain and the body. And one of my favorite people to talk about it with is Dr. April Scott. Dr. April Hello. Scott, can I just say there's got to be a lot of weight in that doctor. When you shake someone's hand, you gotta really lean in. I'm Dr. April Scott. Thank you.
It's surreal because I've been me long before the title came along. I don't give it much because I'm like, because when you're growing up, you see someone like Dr. such and such. And yeah. I'm like, I'm regular. I'm so regular. But it's nice to finally have it.
It's right. It's nice to have under your belt and something that precedes your name. Run me all the letters.
Yes. All right. So just a little bit of background. So I received my bachelor's in psychology with a minor in social work from Tuskegee University. Then I went on to Barry University in Miami, Florida, and received my master's in clinical psych. And then I finished at Auburn University with my PhD in counseling psych. So the letters behind the name are PhD in the field of counseling psychology.
Nice. What made you say, I want to get in people's heads? And while you're answering that question, go ahead and demystify the objective that a therapist goal is not to get in someone's head, but go ahead. I'm going to say,
to thank you. We are not shrinks. That whole term shrink. We do not shrink the brain.
Yeah.
We help people problem solve. And therapists can do so many different things. We help problem solve. We help people process. My goal is always to help people live the life that they deserve and that they desire, whatever that looks like, to help overcome pain, trauma. And sometimes it's just normal day-to-day stuff. Sometimes you just need a sounding board to get some feedback on. And it could also be career counseling. There's so many different things that we can do. So I knew I wanted to get into the mental health world, to be a therapist, a psychologist, when I was probably, I'll say, ninth grade or so.
Okay.
And it was because when I was younger, I was bullied for being dark. And I had a really there was one particular bully in junior high school who would just go in. And it was crazy because he was a little bit darker than me, but he was relentless. And just growing up, I tell people, dark skin being like attractive and the thing that people love, that's fairly new.
Yeah.
That's fairly new. If you in your 30s, 40s,
you remember.
It wasn't always like, remember the name, all of it.
You remember Blackie.
So I heard Blackie, Crunchy Black, Midnight. Yeah. Blackie the Black. Mm-hmm. Love it. I heard that. Growing up, I heard those things growing up. And so you begin to internalize it a little bit and got teased for both that in family, friends, school, not friends. But there was a day I will never forget. I got tired of feeling bad about myself. I was like, I'm tired of not liking who I am. So I remember looking in the mirror and I said, okay, if God doesn't make mistakes and you were created in God's image, every time that you tell yourself you don't like yourself or you feel bad about how you look, you're saying God made a mistake. And you know that's not possible. So that means how you look is in God's image. He meant for you to look like this. So I decided that day to every day I would say something positive about myself. Some days I didn't even believe it, but I just got into the practice of doing it. I said, no more. We're not doing this negative inner dialogue. So I was, I think I was maybe about 13 that happened. And then in about maybe 6 months, I felt it. Like I believed it wholeheartedly. Like I felt like a whole different person who actually loved herself and saw the beauty in myself. And I remember being like, man, the mind is powerful.
Yes.
Because I didn't go to a single therapist, didn't talk to a single person about it. Only thing I did is I said, I'm going to watch how I talk to me. I'm going to be more intentional about how I speak into me. And when I realized, wow, that's just how powerful our thoughts are, I wanted to learn more about it. And I wanted to help other people get a handle on their thoughts and learn how to treat ourselves better and then treat other people better. And that's what started it all. And that's how I got here.
And it's so crazy. You say you didn't go to a single therapist. You fed your mind.
Yes.
And in turn, it fed you right back.
Right back. Yeah. Now, granted, in hindsight, I might have should have told maybe a school counselor. It worked out. Right. But I don't recommend that way, but it worked out.
Right. You need to make a small journal saying, girl, I do not recommend, but
it worked for me.
But it worked in parentheses, it worked for me.
yes, absolutely. That's all my advice, actually. It worked for me. It might not work for you.
It might not work for you. Results vary.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What led you on the path to even wanting to become a mental health professional? Like, how did you know you wanted to go this
far? So I knew that I would have to go all the way for it to be a profitable, a successful career. And my best friend, she said it on we had a podcast episode that I am one of the few people that in ninth grade said, I'm going to be this. And I became that. So I think some of it was just stubbornness. Nope. This is what I'm going to do. And had a lot of good mentors and good examples. And I felt called to it. Like when you're doing what just feels right, there was no reason for me to stop to go another direction. I never felt pulled. Anything else. Only time I ever felt pulled was at the Beyonce concert. And I was like, hey, if Frank Gadsden want to pull me in, I would love to go follow and just I could be a backup, an alternate. That was the only time.
Tell me what you want me to do, Frank. What do you want me to do? I'm here.
I've been practicing. I've been waiting for this moment since I was 12. Since Destiny's Child.
Literally.
I know
all the Destiny's Child choreography.
Yes. I know the parts. Just give me my note. I got you on alto. Let me know.
What you need?
So I wanted to do it, and also not seeing a lot of people who look like me was another motivator. So I'm a firm believer that you can't be what you can't see. I know even just being present so that my students can see me, even my young clients can see, I'm not that special. You can do this too. That was important for me.
How do you feel like the Black community is making space for mental health?
They're doing much better now. Much better now. There's still room for growth, but I think just the fact that you even have a podcast episode, about mental health and that more and more people are talking about their therapists and getting therapy openly, I think we're doing better. I think we got to reach back to our mamas and dads generations a little bit. I think there's a gap there in helping. I think that's missing because sometimes we'll go to therapy and we'll start understanding how things from our childhood have impacted. And we try to go back to mom and dad and they're like, no, I did the best. What? How dare you?
How dare you?
Are you being ungrateful? That's all, mom, but I learned about. So there's some room for growth, but I think we're doing better. What I want us to do a better job of, though, is understanding that mental health is deeper than a caption on Instagram or a cute saying.
Yeah.
Like it's work. It's daily work. And it's also sometimes simple things like just being kind to one another.
Yeah.
That's taking care of yours and others' mental health and not using words like healing as I posted one day, like healing ain't something you pick up at a drive through. Like you'll hear people say, you need to go get healed. I'm like, that's not how it works.
No.
Because what does that mean to be healed? For some healing is a lifelong journey. Mm-hmm. And yes, we want people to undergo it, but I sometimes feel that we're starting to use it almost like an insult. Child, you need to go get you some therapy.
Therapy
is good.
Yeah.
Like we say, go get a massage and come back.
I went and got healed last week. What?
We'll talk maybe 6 to 8 weeks minimum.
Minimum to even be honest, to learn how to be honest with yourself enough.
Exactly.
Because you're still lying to yourself.
You're still lying to yourself. And then you got to sit with so much stuff comes up. So I always tell people there is a messy part of therapy that I don't ever want to glamorize therapy. I love it. I think it's amazing. But there's a part of it that's messy. You got to sit and some stuff that comes up and wrestle with some things that you maybe have not even been aware of or you've been avoiding.
Yeah.
And now when somebody points out like, hey, you know what? I noticed that every time we talk about this,
you've seen me for exactly who I am versus who I want to be portrayed as.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's vulnerable. Vulnerable. And we don't, don't do vulnerability, but we are doing better. There's still some corners that still, believe things like depression is a spirit and you need to lay it all on the altar. I think, and there are some faith-based institutions or some churches that are promoting mental health in the form of therapy, but you still have some that are stuck in that it's just a spirit. That's just a demon you need to get off. You're like, no, it might be some neurotransmitters ain't firing like they need to. We might need to get this person some medicine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you explain exactly what phones are doing to our brains?
Yes, let's talk about phones.
Give me the gimme of what our phones are doing, because I've heard you talk about this before, but I think it would behoove us to not really understand that. Something we hold most of the day subconsciously.
Yes.
So much so that we forget we even have it in the first place and are looking for it while we're on the phone. Yeah. What is it doing for us?
So on a neurological level, it is affecting, there's this thing in the brain called the feedback loop. And what it is, it's always implicated in addiction. And it has to do with the production of dopamine. And dopamine is the neurotransmitter. It's a signal that regulates our reward seeking behaviors. Mm-hmm. Things like delayed gratification, the fact that we know how to delay our gratification, that's because we have like pretty decent feedback loop. Okay, I go to work, but I may not get paid until 2 weeks and I'm cool with that. When that gets regulated, we go to work and we about to pull up the cash register and take our money out because I can't wait 2 weeks. So that's when you think of like addictive behaviors. A lot of that is that feedback loop in our brain has gotten dysregulated. So what studies are showing is that social media is doing the same thing with that feedback loop, because we're getting, every time you see a heart or a comment, it's dopamine rush. And when you think how often, so you know how easily addictive that is. It's like, so now you're checking. Oh, somebody hasn't liked my picture. Yeah. Let me delete it and repost another angle.
Yeah.
Or let me go into another site and post it. So you're constantly using your phone for validation. You're getting caught up in this cycle of you're constantly doing things to get not just gratification, but approval.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're not even aware that's what you're doing. Then on the flip side, there's a comparison piece. So studies have shown both in adolescence, because they focus a lot on the impact of social media on adolescents, but they're now starting to look at adults too. But for both groups, studies have shown that the longer you stay online, the worse you begin to feel about yourself. Don't matter how old. Mm-hmm. Children, adolescents, adults. Because what happens when you're scrolling, you're looking at people, because you know, we only post in our highlights.
Absolutely.
So you're seeing people on, they're losing weight, they're in these great outfits, vacation, couples goals, and you see here, I'm sitting here watching Designing Women and got popcorn for dinner. So you you compare it and you're like, man, I don't look like them. What's wrong with me? How do I look like them? And so what we're starting to see is even what we're seeing on social media shapes our behaviors subconsciously. So now we need to, like, I need to look like them, or I need to go present myself in that way, or have this aesthetic. And then the challenge with social media is it's created to be addictive. You're not going to really read a book for 12 hours a day, because at some point it comes to an end.
Yeah.
Same thing with the movie. Even if you're binging something, at some point it comes to an end.
Yeah.
With social media, there is no end of Instagram. There's no end to Twitter.
No.
There's no, it doesn't even give you a page number to say, oh, I'm on page 18. Let me stop.
Yeah.
You just keep, it's an endless scroll, and it's created because they know as long as they do that, you want to stay on the platform. So that's not, I think social media could be, it could be purposeful if we're intentional about how we use it. But I do think we got to be mindful of how much time we're spending on it. The last thing I'll say, this was something I saw earlier. Social media is also affecting our, because when we are somewhere and we pull our phone out to record it, we are getting in the way of our memory retention of that moment. So when it's time to try to recall what happened in that moment, that memory is fuzzy now because we weren't fully present.
You weren't present.
Because we weren't present. We were recording. So even our memory retention is being impacted by it. Yeah. Our ability to stay focused for longer periods of time. If you notice, I don't know if you can relate, my attention span is horrible now.
Oh, no, it's horrible.
It's like a hummingbird. And it wasn't great. It wasn't great to begin with, but now
it's nothing. Yeah, it's trash.
It's nothing now.
Yeah.
But you know why? Because everything is quick.
So
we got to be, I think, more intentional and about how we use social media, and just know you never see the whole story. The thing that you're looking at that you may be envious of, or, man, I want that. No idea what's going on behind the scenes.
Or what it took to even stage.
What it took. Hello. These get up, watch me wake up in the morning videos. I said, y'all, somebody be for real.
You know what? And I feel like the problem is when we got a hold of Target and Casamigos, that's when the aristocracy just became at an all time high, April. I think that's what happened. When Negroes got Casamigos and Target, and now all of a sudden you just woke up fabulous and perfectly beautiful.
I literally saw someone go like this. I said, don't nobody stretch in the morning like that.
Ain't nobody stretching with their arms out like that.
Stop it. Stop. Y'all are fake. And also, you had to put up that tripod and hop back into bed. Do you not feel foolish?
Furthermore,
do you not feel foolish?
Furthermore, I know you checked your lighting several times in and out that bed. So let's talk about how you really tired from jumping in and out that bed, acting like you just got up. With your lying
and
ass.
Why do we need your morning routine live? Just tell us, hey, this is what I do. And I'm like, we don't need to see it. Someone in my soapbox. We are in the phase that everything is an aesthetic. Everything.
It's got to be.
We can't even, it got to be black girl luxury, soft life. Just live and be. Everything don't need a hashtag.
It doesn't.
Don't.
There's a validation point that comes with that. And I feel, I think this is going to tie into my next question when we talk about what we see on social media being the highlights and what I feel like I'm looking at is a bunch of people who are talking about stories of issues that they've had in the past tense and really pushing the act of constant resilience. There's a constant resilience factor that I feel like is really, it's so fetch and it's so good to be constantly resilient and always just overcoming and always just healing and shedding my skin.
Yeah.
And girl, it's not, no, it's not.
Yes.
It's not. Do you,
I love that you said that.
You think resilience, I was just going to ask, do you think resilience is a trend at this point?
This is so funny because resilience is one of my research areas. Like I have created curriculum on the topic of resilience building. I think it's a little bit of yes and no.
Okay.
I think that something happens when things hit social media or just mass consumption that it gets watered down. Same thing with self-care. So self-care has become trendy, but that doesn't mean it's not important. It's just once it became a commodity, folks started making self-care about like bubble baths, getting your nails done. That's not quite what we mean with self-care. So with resilience at its bare bones is the ability to recover quickly from adversity, how you bounce back from hard times. So it's not about pretending the hard times didn't happen. It's how do you not get stuck in failure? How do you learn from that failure and move on? Sometimes what we see on social media is people take that and turn themselves into self-proclaimed motivational speakers.
Yeah.
And they don't always have the credentials or even the is lacking substance.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with showing how you overcame something, but I also think it's important to say this was hard. I struggled to see the light. This was one of the toughest moments, or I am personally in a tough spell right now. I know I'm going to get out of it, but right now, this hurts. Because now what we have with social media too is people pretending like they don't feel anything. Everybody is so unbothered. I'm cutting everybody out. Nobody. Y'all don't have feelings?
Cancel culture.
Yes. With each other.
With each other.
Like everything is so unbothered. And if you can't get, and it's like, man, y'all hurt. That's what you're hurting.
You're hurt.
You're hurt. Your feelings are hurt.
The conflict resolution is at an all-time low.
Ooh,
oh
yes.
My God.
Just had this conversation with somebody a couple days ago about
people don't do conflict resolution well.
No, they'd rather cut off and run to social media for these like passive aggressive subtle posts. And I kid you not, when people come to me even as a client and we're talking about like a relational issue with someone and they're blah, blah, and this person, and I'm like, okay, have you talked to them about it? No, but let's start there. Because you haven't even given them an opportunity to acknowledge what's happened or correct it.
Yeah.
So you've already made this whole story in your head about the why they did something, what they did. And you didn't even give them the chance to fix it, say, I'm sorry, or even to say, yeah, I meant it. But either way, but it's that fear. Now, here's the thing with conflict resolution. Many of us did not grow up with good examples of healthy conflict. We saw people either do the silent treatment where I'm just not going to talk to you if you make me mad. Or we saw people completely never apologize. They just offer you food or they just start talking to you and you're like, okay, not mad anymore. You saw people go off the handle where they just blow up and everything was just a war. And when you don't see healthy examples, you learn to fear conflict. You think it's always going to end up bad versus understanding that conflict is a natural part of life.
Yeah.
And all it means is just we are not seeing eye to eye on something. That don't mean I don't like you.
Yeah.
It don't mean you're a bad person. It means something has happened and I need to talk to you about it. But what I think the problem with conflict resolution is, again, that hurt. Folks get hurt. It sometimes incites a trauma response. But for some people, you hurt me, I shut down. You will never hurt me again.
Yeah.
I'm going into my shell. I'm putting every single wall, barricade up, moat. Some dragons gonna be out there. Yeah. You would never get close to me again. But when that happens, we don't talk through it. Give that person, we don't learn that problems can be fixed. But yes, you are 100% correct. We struggle with conflict resolution a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and it's weird because I don't even know if I can synonymize it. I didn't really know how to synonymize it with it being a trend, or what does that have to do with? What is it? And you just answered the question. It's we are what we see. We're accumulation of the things we've experienced, the people that were there with us. And yeah, it is what it is in terms of how does one get better at that? And you know what? Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
How have you been able to, how has that transpired in the dating community? Lack of conflict resolution.
Jesus.
Bring the walls down.
I might be the wrong person to answer this. It's raw, James. It's raw.
I didn't know.
I had this, had a 2-hour conversation with somebody around this because it's just poor conflict resolution skills. I think it makes dating very hard.
Yeah.
When people don't have good conflict resolutions. And this is something that I don't mind sharing this. I remember telling this guy that I was dating or had dated, because I shared with him something about something, how what he did, how it affected me. And he said, I'm not used to people, to women being this honest with me. And I say, yeah, but the problem is, I feel like when I am honest with you, you then shut down. So I feel like I get punished for my truth and my honesty. And I'm always very intentional about tone, or at least I try to be. Like, I'm telling you so you can have the information so we can put it out on the table and figure out now what do we do about it. But I think, and I even said it, I said, but when people are not used to someone being like upfront, they take it as, oh, like I'm getting sent to the principal's office. No, it's an opportunity for us to talk about it. You might be feeling uncomfortable because none of us like to be called on stuff or to know that we've done something that may have hurt or harmed. So yeah, it's a little discomfort. But that doesn't mean it's an attack.
Yeah.
So I think what happens in the dating world, we interpret any type of uncomfortable conversation as, oh, I'm not safe, or I'm about to be attacked, or this person is judging. No, it's just be able to sit in discomfort and being able to articulate what has happened and what you need from it. Because otherwise, you're just fussing and nagging.
Yeah.
That's not conflict resolution either. But nobody wants to hear that. So I think being able to say, I feel hurt, I feel ignored, I feel abandoned when you do this, I would like for us to, and then this is what I would like. What do you think? It ain't an easy conversation, but you see, like, that shouldn't be difficult. But if we've never had the language to even do that, never seen it modeled, or we get super defensive, then it makes it very hard. So I think with the dating world, that lack of conflict resolution, and also sometimes it's just a lot of lack of emotional intelligence out there.
Yeah. Oh my God. There's so many big grown people with no emotional intelligence.
It is. Yes. And that's a bad combination. Low emotional intelligence and low conflict resolution skills. This is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. And don't be an adult in the world functioning. How are you making it?
They probably got a bunch of people around them who were annoyed by them.
I'm sick of your shit.
Right. It's always something. It's always something.
Yeah.
I think, too, the problems with the dating world is unrealistic expectations we're supposed to get from our partner. I will never forget something Dr. Napoleon Wells, I quote him all the time. He did a talk back after the movie Moonlight. And he was talking about the themes of intimacy, friendship, and love. And he said, we have this thing, particularly in the straight community, that a woman is supposed to teach men how to love. A woman is supposed to teach a man. A woman is supposed to teach. And he was just like, nah.
No.
That's, why would you put that burden on another person? Right. And so he was saying that kind of juxtaposes I said that word wrong, along with the themes from Moonlight around love and just friendship and seeing it in a different lens. But I think sometimes we look to our partners as cure-alls. This person's going to heal all my pain. They're going to make me feel beautiful. They're going to heal all my insecurity. They're going to heal that inner child in me. And it's like, really?
As if someone created somebody on this world to just heal you. As if that is the purpose of why Johnny is walking on this earth.
And did Johnny agree to any of those terms?
Not a one.
So then you're going to be disappointed because you set up these expectations that Jesus himself, you know, can't be able to fulfill or can only.
Right.
And I will never forget what that, it's a line from a poem that said, people are not our homes. Meaning just because you love someone, you don't own them. They're not like something that is just exists for your benefit. Being able to see relationships, not just transactional, but like it's mutually beneficial. I pour into you, you pour into me. But we got to get to some base level emotional intelligence before we can get to that point.
Oh my God. Yeah. We have got to just roll before we crawl and then crawl before, you know what I'm saying? Yes. Let's just do tummy time. Okay.
Exactly. Let's hold your neck up.
Hold your neck up, baby. Just let's start there.
Can you support your head?
Can you support your head before you cause me to lose mine? God damn.
Put that on a shirt.
Okay. On the front and on the back. Tell me about love languages. How important are love languages in the initial stages of dating?
So this goes back, I think, to just emotional intelligence and also just talking. So I do like the concept of love languages. I cannot remember the guy's name who wrote it, but love language is not meant to be as literal as sometimes I hear people saying it. Like, it ain't like English and Spanish. Yeah. Whereas if you speak another language, I won't be able to understand you. That's not quite how love languages are. I think sometimes people get, mine is acts of service. So if you don't know, like I joke with a friend who he said, because I asked him, what's your love language? He said, all of them. I like all that shit. All of them. I said, okay. Good to know. But I think love languages are important, even just how do you like to be appreciated? How do you show appreciation? So for some people, it's time. If I give you my time, that means I'm really messing with you. And for others, it's words. But I think it's important to know that so that you know how to perceive what they're doing. Because if I don't know that time is your love language, and you call me to say, hey, come grocery shopping with me, I'm like, why do I want to go grocery shopping with you? What? Yeah. But I'm like, oh, you want to spend time with me? Cool. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely important to, and some people don't know the whole love languages concept. So sometimes you can just break it down. It's like, how do you know when you're appreciated? Like, what do people do? Or what would you love for people to do to know that you're appreciated and loved and valued?
I will say being in the dating scene at one point, I had, because I came out of a 10-year relationship.
Yeah.
And we had love languages like at the same time. So when I got out of it, like I was just amazed to see the amount of no black men that were like, what is it? It was literally like, what's your love language? And they would be like, what is it? One point, no lie, I had love language hyperlink in my notes. So I could just send it like, because we got to start there. And I had to learn, like, we have to start. We got to start here. So if you don't even know what that means.
Yeah. What was the reaction like when you would share it with them and they would look over it? Like, how would they respond?
So the red flag to me is you're not even looking at it, because that was the thing, too.
One. Yes.
Oh, you didn't look at the link. OK, perfect. Cool. Why haven't you called me? I haven't called you because you couldn't bother to read the goddamn link. You didn't even want to start there.
You didn't make it past the introduction.
You didn't even make it past the introduction, pimp. But for those who did actually wanted to learn or had heard of it and wanted to learn more about it, that created space for more conversation, more understanding on what we're doing here and what are we not going to be doing here.
Yeah.
So I will say that it was a hit and miss. It was trial and error. I think a person being able to explore themselves in terms of whether it be love languages or what drives your love, it says a lot when you're ready to actually look introspectively. And that says that. And I often say people can only deal with other people as deeply as they deal with themselves.
Exactly. Yes. They can only go to the depth that they're at. And, sorry.
No, go ahead.
One thing I'll add to the love languages is the book All About Love by Bell Hooks. I'm currently reading it now, and I think I'm like on chapter 3, and it's like, life-changing. Bell Hooks is basically deconstructing everything that we've been taught about what love is. And one of the first chapters, she makes a distinction that we thought or think that love is just about care and nurture. So caring about someone and nurturing them is not, that love is deeper than that. And she even pulls apart how many of us are going to wrestle with the fact that we might not have been loved the way we needed to be in our childhood. That doesn't mean that our parents didn't do the best that they could, but we may have needed more, but they only, that's all they had to give. And even being able to separate love from, and that knowing the two cannot coexist. You can't have love, because a key component of is care and nurture. That's not it. But if you're abusing someone, they're like, it's not the same, whether that's physical or verbal. Great, great book. And I think it should be required reading for all humans, because it just, it's such a, just a great, and it's not like in a self-help book way. Love yourself. No, first she said, we got to define this thing, because I think we've been calling it, what we've been calling love hadn't really been love. But yeah, so I recommend All About Love by Bell Hooks. If you're in Colombia, go to the library, get the Libby or Hoopla app, get it for free as an ebook.
The Libby or the Hoop, and more people need to know that, including myself. Yes. So ebooks, yes, is a thing.
Yes.
And it's free.
And free. Audiobooks too. You can get, with Hoopla, you can get movies, comic books. I think I watched, I forgot the name, but I watched My Cousin Vinny using a Hoopla app today. All you need is your library card. So Libby and Hoopla, Overdrive is another one. Love it. Free.
You learn something new
every day.
Every day. Do you think that men should bring a proof of standing of a standing therapy appointment with them, like a COVID card?
April? Oh, Jesus. When I tell you, I hollered at that question. Because April want to say, yeah. And yes. Dr. April has to go, you know. Therapy isn't always accessible for everyone, especially Black men. I think it is good. First of all, I think it's, you know how like when you apply for a job, they have minimum qualifications and preferred qualifications? Yeah. I think therapy or some experience in therapy is a preferred qualification.
Yes.
But some type of evidence that you've done some type of introspective work, whether it's journaling, where it's like, man, I sat back and reflected on my life and I realized some type of awareness. I think Black people should have therapy. I think it should be free for all Black people, particularly Black Americans in the United States, just for what we have to endure here. Black men, especially because of the messages given to them or how they're supposed to be, it ain't healthy. Mm-hmm. And given these very small boxes to fit in, you have to be strong. That's it. It's like, whoa, what happens when you're not? So even whether it's what happens when I explore that, or I want to define masculinity for myself, or I don't believe my masculinity is only limited to that. That's why I think therapy can help. And even just having that safe space to talk about feelings.
Yeah.
And to say the fact, oh gosh, so many men I meet who've never cried, or say the only time they've cried was at like a family member, close relative's funerals, parent. And I'm thinking, man, what's happening then? Because that sadness goes somewhere.
Yeah.
So if it's not coming out, where is it going? I think that's also a reason why Black men's life expectancy rate is lower and so many heart issues, because they're not often given space. And sometimes they're not exploring the space to dig a little deeper there. Yeah. I would love if there was some type of card to say, I am going to this amount. Matter of fact, not just a card, but here's a recommendation letter from my therapist.
Has your therapist recommended that you be dating me right now? Has it? No.
Have you been cleared by your doctor?
Have you? Can I see the permission slip for today? Because you may be only available per your therapist's recommendation today, between the 1st and the 15th.
Yes.
Because toward the end, there's too much going on. So if it's the 19th and we're on the first date, you're at a 4-day, you're out of your 15-day window. It's not gonna work.
Yeah, or right here it says your therapist said you have not fully gotten over your ex, so to proceed with caution.
So it's saying, I'm looking at paragraph 3, section 2, where it says, well, you do forgive, you're still angry at your mom, so you have mommy issues from. So yeah, this, no, you fed mm-hmm. out. You're gonna stress me out. Now I don't think that's gonna work.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. Or right here, it says that when you get angry, you tend to hold it in and then lash out at the smallest inconvenience. Is that still a thing? Good to know. Yeah.
Based on your qualification, and I want you to read it like it's a credit report. Based on your qualification, it has not been recommended that you two date. I am open for sexual favors, though. So if you want...
We call that a rush card. You need a rush card.
Load that bitch up.
It's a prepaid. You got a limit.
Load that motherfucker up every 2 to 3 weeks. And when you run out.
So we're going to pay us. Yes.
When you run out and then have an app connected to it so you know when you're getting low. Yeah.
Yes. And that's how you separate, because some benefits are American Express mm-hmm. and some are Rush Card, certain perks. Mm-hmm. So we got to have Rush Card expectations.
Is that
but a, you can't do that.
You can't do
you
that.
Can't, you know, yeah, yeah. Let's make sure we stay within our spending limit here.
You're stepping outside. You're cruising for a bruising. You're cruising for a bruising.
You're stepping into the black card, Wayne. You're stepping into the black card. Let's come back over to prepaid.
Come back over for me. Come here real quick.
These are prepaid minutes.
Yeah, these are prepaid minutes. Yeah.
Come back.
We've got 17 to go.
Yes. Wouldn't it be great?
Oh my God. So much elimination of confusion.
It would be. I think though with dating, honestly, I was talking to one of my girlfriends about this. I think we also make dating hard when we don't walk away the first time we see it. We see the flags.
Yeah.
And when we, and I don't mean walking away for every small thing, but when we first get that, this is going to be a problem for me, mm-hmm. stay hoping that person is going to just magically change. That's when we are then the, like, you're the enabler a little bit.
Yeah.
There. I think that's important, is being able to say, this is what I want. These are my requirements. And sticking to that and not settling. Because the thing with settling, and maybe I'm speaking for myself, I don't think I've ever settled and not later regretted it.
Yeah.
With anything in life, I don't think I can think of a single time where I lowered my standards or settled for something that was less than what I knew we wanted. Been like, you know what? That was actually a smart idea. I don't think I can say
that. I'm glad I settled into that comfortable space that really wasn't for me in the first place. That really helped. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says no.
No one. Yeah.
And I wonder how little we account for all of those times that we did settle. How many times have you really sat down and thought about it?
Ooh, Lord. Enough. Yeah. Or even, and I think, oh, that's such a good question, because that goes back to what we were talking about before about the messiness. Because when you sit back and think about it, it's, that don't feel good.
Yeah.
I don't like how that feels.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough thing to acknowledge, but I think the better question is the why did I settle?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was it I was impatient?
Yeah.
Was I lonely?
Yeah.
Did I not think that the thing I wanted was, I'll give a great example. And this is actually a work thing. I was asked to do a gig and the rate was significantly lower than what I knew I needed to make it happen, for it to make sense. And I'm at the space where I'm still getting comfortable, like stating, this is my rate. Mm-hmm. This is, and I was like, well, I could do it and make it work. And I was like, no, because I did that once before and I was mad the whole time. Mm-hmm. I knew I was getting, and because I remembered the time that I settled and how it just did not feel good. It was almost exploitive. I said, no. And I said, hey, I'm sorry. This is my rate. We can talk about other options, but this is what, you know. And I was even willing to budge within that. They gave me more than what I had initially asked for.
Look at that.
After that.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. But it was scary. Mm-hmm. So scary. But in that moment of saying, no, I'm not going to take this, I had to be ready that I might have to walk away from this. And I think when we in those spaces where we're making that decision of whether I settle, just know the other side of that is you got to walk away.
Yeah.
If it doesn't meet your needs.
Yeah.
And I think that's the scary part.
Yeah. Yeah. And the disappointment there that follows therein. Yeah.
Yeah.
From sitting around and hoping that
Yeah.
Oh, I will settle into this rate. I'll settle into, oh, it's not before the money. Of course it's, of course I'm working because I want to get paid. Of course I want my rate.
Yeah.
That's that. There's a lot to take into account of those moments where we disappoint ourselves and then we project that disappointment onto someone else based on an expectation that wasn't communicated.
That's it.
And not staying within the standard that you set for yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's so true. And that, but going back to what you said before about how often do we sit back and think about the times we settled. And I think because I remember, like, it was still fresh, it was easier for me to go, no, stand your ground. And then the other fear was like, oh, what are they going to think of me? Are they going to think that I'm, like, ungrateful or greedy? Mm-hmm. What if, and I had to just say, no, you know who you are. You know the quality you provide and you know your values. Just trust that it's going to work out. Even if this don't work out, it's going to work out in the grand scheme. And it was scary.
Yeah.
It was scary to do, even though it's something that scale. But I think that translates to so many other things in our life. So in dating, being able to say, yeah, I mean, it's cool for now. But 6 months from now, am I going to still be wanting more? It's like when you crave a steak, go get some chicken nuggets because McDonald's is right there.
And you still want that filet mignon.
You going to still want that filet mignon when you finish with those chicken nuggets.
Still want that filet mignon.
Because one thing chicken nuggets are not, it's not a filet mignon.
It is not a center cut. It's not a center cut.
It is not a ribeye at all. Mm-mm. And it never will be, no matter how much sweet and sour or barbecue sauce you put on it.
No matter how much you douse
on it. Still going to be a chicken. Still going to be a chicken nugget.
A chicken nugget is a chicken nugget.
A chicken nugget. Because you know what? But it also told you it was a chicken nugget. You saw it when you ordered. But it was
you knew it was a chicken nugget and you ordered it supplementing the idea. And now look at you. Look at you eating a five piece. Look at you just eating that five piece unhappy. For the sake of settling and satisfaction.
For the sake of convenience.
Of convenience. Yeah.
Gotta get us.
I'm gonna move on with our last question. And we were touching on culture. So with the suicides of Chelsea Chris, Twitch, and Mayor Kevin Ward of Maryland, where do you see the future of Black mental health in the face of media?
Man, I hope we can stay on top of it and not treat it like a trending topic. That's one of my frustrations sometimes when there is a suicide in the media, is that it gets a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And it's like, mental health is real. Mental health is real. And then we go back doing what we were doing before. I hope it can be a sustained conversation where we learn how to recognize warning signs of suicide. But I always say suicide prevention starts with day-to-day stuff.
Yeah.
Suicide prevention is watching how you treat each other. Suicide prevention is making sure people have a livable wage so that they can take care of themselves, that they're not depressed because they don't have, they're worried about how rent is going to get paid. Mm-hmm. Suicide prevention is healthcare access. We're talking about these injuries. Like, imagine being sick and you got to decide between your rent and a prescription.
Yeah.
Or a car note and a prescription. So all of these things are suicide prevention. But I think if we could just be kinder to one another, and I know that sounds so like Sesame Street or Mr. Rogers, but I think we have the power to make or break somebody's day. We don't realize this with every interaction. So I was in Trader Joe's the other day and there was this young Black guy. And I just remember I walked past, so you have beautiful skin. I don't know if anyone has ever told you that. And he just started blushing immediately and was like, thank you. And I was just thinking, oh, I hope that, you know, that it was nice. It felt good to me to even see him smile. Yeah. So even like in our small interactions, if we could be kinder to one another, and when we are doing that, I think that opens up a space for our friends to come to us when they're not doing well, because they know we are safe for them to be vulnerable and be messy with, have those ugly conversations. I hope that when we see all these things in the media, we look around our circle and say, who hasn't been themselves lately? Who have not? I haven't heard from such and such. Let me go by and see if they're okay.
Yeah.
Or I know this person's going through a breakup. Let me go. Let's take them to the park or something. Hope that we become more intentional beyond checking on your friends. Yeah. Check on your strong friends. Yeah. Like, just go do it. Don't type it. Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, the actions. It's the actions. It all boils down to actions.
It is.
Love is an action-oriented thing. You gotta,
make the move. Love is a verb. Mm-hmm. It's a verb. Show me. Show your love. Me. Yeah.
I love
it. So if we could just do better, just love one another a little, be nicer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference. I've always, one of the things I love about myself is that I'm complimentary. I'm going to give somebody a compliment. Yes. Your skin, your clothes, your hair. I think because I don't know if anybody else has told
it. It goes such a long way.
It goes such a long ways.
Yeah. And it takes nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing to. And sometimes it could even be a compliment or just don't be a jerk. Mm-hmm. I know we're supposed to close. If you saw those videos of people going off at the gate agents at the airports when all of these flights were getting shut down and they going, I'm like, they didn't cancel the flight.
They're miserable just like you are.
They have no control over what's happening. They don't have control over who, what pilot showed up, who gets scheduled.
They don't even know them. They don't even know
them. They are not the they're not the CEOs. They are not. So just how they were being treated, I'm like, come on, y'all. Yeah. Like, I get it. You frustrated, but what you think they got to do with it?
Yeah. Dr. Scott, it has been a pleasure having you on. We appreciate your time, your talent.
Thank you.
How can people get in touch with you? Are you open to the people getting in touch or do they just need to get in touch with themselves?
No, they can reach out if they need some help and some guidance. We'll help to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am on Instagram, Dr. April Scott, all one word, DrApriLScott. You can hit me by email at hello@draprilscott.com. I also have a website, draprilscott.com. So any of those ways, you can hit me up. Yeah, either ways will work.
Perfect. Dr. April Scott, ladies and gentlemen, give a round of applause.
Thank you.
We appreciate you so much. And we thank you guys for listening to the Black Queer Culture Show. Be sure to tune in. We got more episodes to go. All right, guys. Yeah. Thank y'all so much. Thanks, Dr. April Scott.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Black Queer Culture Show with James Patrick.